I sit back at these events where we're talking about changing the world and making things better and changing people's ways of thinking. And meanwhile, backstage, I'm seeing these big, inefficient, dirty, carbon emitting, hydrocarbon fuel guzzling machines. And I thought there's a better way.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome, everyone, to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Johnny Palmer. Johnny is a British-Australian entrepreneur, activist, and a business adventurer who has built a portfolio of companies and projects across multiple sectors, all underpinned by three values, whether cleaning up rivers, investing in commercial property, developing leading media companies, engineering renewable power innovations, or any other project. Johnny focuses on sustainability, disruption, and growth. Welcome, Johnny, to The Butterfly Effect.
Thank you for having me.
I love your priority in life and business with applying those three values. Maybe we should start with just share what you do.
A mixture. I'm involved in lots of projects. I think business should be fun, and I think it's the most effective way we've got of changing the world right now. So the projects I do, some make money, some make change, and some do what they can and what I can to try and make environmental improvement. So it's quite a broad range of projects that I'm involved in.
You want to dive into one?
TV studios, live events, accommodation in geodesic domes, renewable power, commercial property, and also a software streaming platform for live events. So quite a mixed portfolio, but all underpinned by the same values and the same approach to business and life.
Is it more multimedia companies and a little bit of other things, or is it...
Well, a mixture. So our business with TV studios does corporate broadcasting for training events and product launches and thought leadership. That's mm-hmm. very sustainable because it's getting away from live in-person events. The other side of that is doing production for live events, you know, things ranging from festivals to tours to conferences. And then the streaming is linked into that sector in that it helps people experience and get the benefit of content from events while they're at home. So I'm tapping on every aspect of communication and sharing messages through those companies. But then I've got other businesses I'm involved in that tap into the same resources or the same ethos or the same sort of contacts and passion. So to me, it's a big overlapping Venn diagram of everything that I do, even though from the outside it might seem rather disparate and incoherent to some people at times.
Yes. And I know one of your company is SolCell, which is solar panels, right?
So basically in the live events world, something that's really grated on me for years is diesel generators. I sit back at these events where we're talking about changing the world and making things better and changing people's ways of thinking. And meanwhile, backstage, I'm seeing these big, inefficient, dirty, carbon-emitting, hydrocarbon fuel guzzling machines. And I thought there's a better way. So I looked at solar panels and batteries and realized we could make our own on-site power stations. So we used a bunch of existing technology and packaged it in a way that means that we can both produce, generate, and deliver energy on-site, off-grid, at events, completely renewably.
And is that enough? Or you have no backup?
Nowhere near enough. In terms of what? Making change?
Both, making change and making enough energy for the event.
Oh, no, it's not even touching the sides in terms of making change. But for events, it triggers a much more interesting engineering discussion around power usage. When you're using renewables, you've got to really think about how you're using your power, what your peak loads are, what your usage profile is, and when you're utilizing that energy. So it makes the engineers around events think much more intelligently about consumption. And to me, that's something we need to be doing on a broader societal level with everything we do. So it instantly jumps into this kind of philosophical space of how we consume and how we use resources. And I love that exploding complexity around something as simple as a solar panel and a battery.
Right. And if you're in England, there's not always sun. So is that going to be sufficient?
Well, UK, surprisingly, is one of the best in the world for renewable powers. And you are right, our sunshine situation is pretty dire in the UK, but we actually do really, really well on solar power generation.
So you can have a solar panel at an event and that will be sufficient enough for the event.
Absolutely. If the system's designed correctly. Yeah. I mean, you know, 20 panels with a series of batteries that are pre-charged from renewables, I have powered some quite considerable stages at live events using this technology. Of course, it's not the solution to every situation, but it's a good start for things like audio, video, and lighting systems.
Do you use it in any other place, or is it just for events?
Well, anywhere you need off-grid power. So I've used it for construction. I used it to power construction equipment like cement mixers and jackhammers to put steps into river access where there was no power. We've also used it for lighting up sites for access and construction work as well. So yeah, really diverse applications. The mission is to try and get rid, or do our bit to get rid, of diesel powered generators. That's the mission. That's the vision.
And I know with your company Pitch, and this is the company that we're talking about, right? You also recently planted a forest. And I think that that's a great idea. Can you share why you decided to do that?
Story goes back. We bought an island to fix up some rivers, and then we had some land, so we thought we should plant some trees. And I realized that tree planting obviously sequesters carbon to an extent, but it also creates what I call human habitat. So we've planted actually an orchard more than a forest. So the idea is it's going to take carbon from the air, it's going to produce free food for people, and it's also an education piece in that children can see these beautiful apples growing down by the River Avon in the Cotswolds in the UK, and they can eat fruit from the land they're playing on. And I love that collision of all those things happening at once, because I think it can change the way people see the world.
Who planted, the community or people from Pitch?
A whole bunch of us, people from work, a group called More Trees Baines, which are an amazing community group. Also an organization called Good Gym. So an army of enthusiastic, but not particularly competent tree planters appeared out of nowhere, planted a load of trees, and then did the same thing again the next weekend. Brought together all sorts of different people from all different walks of life and different states of mind, and created more connections in our community.
And who maintained those trees? Because it's great that you planted, but trees need to survive and not being cut down or watered, or, you know, there's more than just planting.
Absolutely. A big part of it is those volunteers coming back, myself included, to go and do the maintenance work, which usually is a matter of a bit of chippings around the trees to make sure they get the sunlight they need to bed their roots down, to get to enough height to grow above the grass, so they're then self-sufficient and can grow more. So the people who plant the trees then put more time in to continue to look after and love these trees.
That's great inspiration for other organizations to become. In a way, they become carbon neutral, right?
Eventually. I mean, that's why I'm being very careful with my language here, to suggest that planting this orchard and these woodland trees is going to completely make us carbon neutral would not be true. So I think it's careful to not fall into the trap of virtue signaling greenwashing to suggest that planting a few trees makes everything okay, because it doesn't, but it's better than nothing, and it's a good start to getting people thinking different and engaging with each other in the community.
Well, you need a bigger forest, or you need to do a little bit more.
Just need more trees. But the other thing as well is what people are doing is they'll go and, for example, burn a load of hydrocarbons, fossil fuels, and then plant trees. But they've already burnt those hydrocarbons. They're in the air. But the trees will take years, if not decades, to sequester that carbon. So it's really important to think about time frames here, and to not trick oneself into thinking that planting trees makes up for what you've done today.
And also the age of the tree, the location of the tree, the type of the tree. It's more than just plant a tree.
There's more to it than that. I think the big thing to consider is how much carbon are you taking from the air over time, and how that relates to the carbon you've emitted. If we just offset all our carbon emissions by planting trees, there'd be a 10, 20 year lag in taking those carbons out of the air. Meanwhile, we're adding more carbon to the atmosphere. So it's not as simple as planting trees and therefore be guilt free.
And also, we need to remember, we need to preserve and protect the trees that are there.
Indeed, it's not just about carbon. It's also about biodiversity. It's also about education. And it's also about creating human habitat as well, because we don't need to deny ourselves access to wilderness ourselves. You know, we are creatures of the earth. So we want trees to climb and play under and eat from. And I think that's important to remember as well.
And also, it's probably, you'll see back the birds and small animals and insects in your orchard. So kind of like bring back animals, not just people.
Indeed. I've already seen snakes, frogs, otters. We have otters. We've got eagles down there. It's a real party place for all the different creatures.
You grew up in a farm in rural Tasmania before moving to the UK.
Yes, correct.
Do you feel that helped shape your values and inspired your work?
Yeah, it made the natural environment a place that just felt right, but it also made me a little bit numb to intensive farming as well. So then when I learned more about that living in Britain, I then realized the things that I was growing up around that were normal maybe weren't okay, which made me dig deeper, because the Tasmanian agriculture is actually quite brutal. It's not like British, where it's actually very much husbandry focused with the land. So yeah, it's very much shaped my start to my journey, and also made me look more critically towards things. It's not just a continuation of my childhood though, definitely not. I'm much more self-critical and analytical than that.
So what made you start? What was the start of your journey?
Just realizing that I love rivers and they just feel right. I think, you know, humans, we love water and we just love being in water. And it felt wrong to me that the water was being polluted. And I thought, okay, well, this is something I care a lot about. It's something I've got a voice on. And it's a very specific environmental cause that I can really do something about. So I've absolutely gone hell for leather, focusing on cleaning up the rivers of Britain.
So this is what you're doing? You're going and cleaning up rivers in Britain?
What I'm doing is I'm campaigning to stop the process of raw sewage overflows into rivers. And that's my very, very specific thing I'm going for. So I've set up an organization called Sewage Free Swimmers. I also founded the Wally Weir Project, which aligns with the same thing. And I'm also promoting usage of our waterways through an organization called Swim Bristol Harbour, which quite simply is making it so that people can swim in Bristol Harbour.
And what exactly do you do? You just petition, clean, what is it that you do?
With the sewage side of things, the main role I'm playing is being a very vocal, very visible and highly disruptive voice against the water companies. I looked at all the people doing activism. There's some great organizations out there like Rivers Trust and Surfers Against Sewage, but I felt they were all quite moderate, and I felt the role that I could play in that was being a bit more punchy. So I've added a more sort of edgy voice to the conversation to try and make the change. So if you look me up online, you'll see stuff in national press and local press that's really kind of attacking the water companies and shedding a light on the disgusting practices that they do that pollute and destroy our waterways.
So you have a stage here. What is it that you tell them?
My catchphrase is stop pumping shit in the rivers. And I mean that in the literal sense. And it's a strong message, because when you ask someone, do you want more or less shit in your rivers? Everyone agrees that we think that less shit in the rivers is better. So it's not hard to convert people and get them into my way of thinking.
But you need to give them an alternative, right? So what can they do with all that?
Well, this is an interesting point. It's a good question, because to what extent is it to me to tell the water companies how to do their jobs, right? We'd all agree that water companies, sewage companies shouldn't pump sewage in. So I suggest that there are a series of ideas. There's 5 or 10 different methods they could use, but it's actually not for me to tell them how to do their job when they're making hundreds of millions of pounds of profit to do their job. I suggest things, but I'm not going to tell them how to do their job. I'm here to get the conversation started, shine the light on it, and get people fired up to really put pressure on them to stop the process of pumping sewage into rivers.
And what are some of the suggestions?
UV treatment's very effective because it zaps the E. coli that goes into rivers. Mm-hmm. There's also better filtration. There's also attenuation tanks. They could also quite simply build large enough sewage treatment plants such that they're actually processing the sewage rather than letting it flow into the rivers without processing it.
So that's something companies can do.
It would not. Oh, they can absolutely do it. Absolutely. And they are making sufficient profit. One in particular, Wessex Water, who I do a lot of stuff with, you know, they make an operating profit of over £200 million while pumping raw sewage into rivers. So my suggestion and proposal is that perhaps you shouldn't make quite so much money when you're pumping shit in the rivers.
Right. And do you start to see change?
I'm seeing a lot of the conversation changing. I'm seeing a lot of attention. I'm seeing that it's being discussed in Parliament in the UK, which is good. I'm also seeing water companies spending significant money doing measurements and analysis to find out what the root cause of these issues is. So it's going in the right direction, but the actual meaningful action is not good enough yet. Because in my world, you get stuff done. You don't just talk about it for 2 years. You do it now. But, you know, this is bigger problems involving hundreds of millions of pounds. So maybe I should be more patient, but that doesn't really sit very well with me.
And we don't have time.
We don't have time because, you know, wild swimming's taking off, which is a fantastic thing. Meanwhile, those people don't want to be swimming around in their own poo.
Right. Okay. So you work on green energy. You work on clean water. And a little bit on planting trees. Anything else?
Yeah, my most interesting project recently was I need to build some more office space for my company, and construction is pretty intensive on resources. So I looked at what else I could use rather than office, and I bought myself an airliner jet, which is now the office that I use at my industrial estate.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Fly it around?
It doesn't have wings or engines. It's just a fuselage. Okay. But yeah, so for me, that was a really overt piece of upcycling, which I'd love it if more people did. It's so much fun. I think it'd be brilliant if more people look to upcycle things to make useful space where, you know, what I referred to earlier is human habitat, space where humans can live their lives and have a positive impact on the world in spaces which are upcycled.
That is pretty cool. What advice can you give to a founder or CEO or an executive manager that wants to apply some of those values in their company?
Okay, first value, sustainability. Don't think sustainability is just being environmental. Sustainability is about being able to do what you do now forever. Now, you can't keep destroying the planet. You can't exploit staff. You can't frustrate clients. You also can't lose money. So you've got to think about everything you do. Can I do this for the foreseeable future? And stop living short term, environmentally, financially, relationships, supply chains, everything. That's my big one. Mm-hmm. And another piece of advice I'd give is about disruption. Do not look at the world and accept it the way it is. Do not listen to people who say this is the way it has to be and this is the way everyone else does it. Just use your common sense. Ask questions like, is the future more or less renewable power? Is the future more or less meat-based? And you'll very quickly come to conclusions, which are just obvious to you, and then just follow the obvious. You don't have to be that clever. And then go for those things. Work hard. Do it with passion. Do it with authenticity. And fight hard. And don't be afraid to piss some people off in the process.
So use your voice and use your head.
Yeah, that's good. Voice and head. I like that.
What is the biggest challenge you're facing right now?
I find it very hard to get people to share my way of thinking sometimes. And I've spent my life working on that in terms of communication and packaging up ideas in a way that are relatable to people. So I think that's a big challenge for anyone who thinks differently from other people.
Do you have any ways of tackling that or strategic?
Yeah, the number one strategy is always have curiosity. Find out what people are thinking, what their current paradigms are, learn about them. Two reasons that's good. One is you'll understand them so you can better present something to them. And the other thing is you learn in the process. And they also feel like they've been listened to, so they're more likely to listen to you. So I think curiosity is absolutely critical for making change.
It's great for learning as well. So if you want to learn on any of those things we just talked about, curiosity is key.
I think curiosity is essential. So when I meet people now I might work with, what I'm looking for is, are they curious? That to me is the most valuable attribute in any person. Because if they're curious, they're receptive, they're going to learn, they're going to grow, and they're going to be productive. So curiosity to me is an absolutely top trait.
Do you wish to be at some point carbon negative? Are you working on that?
Yeah, in the media business pitch, RMD Jordan Tompkins, he's gone for B Corp status. We're currently at 80.2 points, so we hope to get certified shortly. From that position, we'll then be looking at going carbon negative through a lot of different means. The first one being, rather than focus on offsetting, start with not emitting in the first place. To me, it's a lot easier to not make a mess than clean up mess. It's a lot harder to clean tomato sauce off the ceiling than it is to avoid spraying tomato sauce on the ceiling in the first place. So we'll be looking at how we can reduce our consumption and our emissions as well as offset. But to me, it's not about, you know, being bad over there and good over there. We want to reduce our impact overall because it's a lot easier to not do the thing in the first place and to clean up the mess afterwards.
Right. And it goes back to the advice and your three values. So I truly appreciate that. Johnny, as an activist, not everybody's like you. And we would love to see more people like you. If people are not active in activism or not pushing towards that, how can they start?
I think the first thing is to look where your superpower is. What is the thing that you can actually change? Joining the army of people trying to reduce plastic and plant trees and reduce carbon, it's unlikely you're going to make a difference on your own. But there might be something you as an individual have a superpower over that you can make big change on. Find what that is. And then, I have a phrase, do what you can when you can. Whatever's possible right now, do it. That could be as simple as signing a petition or sending a letter, or it might be setting up a group or taking photographs. Whatever it is, it's authentic to you. Do what you can when you can straight away.
Yes, and you need to remember that it's not that you just have one, you're just one and your one voice doesn't count. It does, because one and one and one is all of us.
Indeed, but you might be an amazing, for example, photographer. Take some beautiful photographs sharing your your emotion and your view of things. Or if you're a great communicator, do some public speaking. Use whatever your superpower is to make the change that you're most able to make.
What is your favorite tree?
My favorite tree, I love silver birches. I just love their utility value. I like that they're strong. I like the fact that we can do amazing things, like our plyboard is just like a gift from nature. And I love the fact that you can peel it off and make this papery stuff that's great for starting fires. And I've got some happy memories with my children peeling off the bark of silver birches. So definitely the silver birch.
Love it. Thank you, Johnny, for joining me and sharing your work and your values and your tips and enthusiasm.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.